is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Katie Weaver reports on recent cases of monkeypox. Anna Mateo brings us words and their stories. Dan Friedel has the higher education report on attending college through the pandemic. Brian Lynn has a story on the deadly effects of worldwide pollution. And John Russell and Ashley Thompson bring us a story on Buddhist chaplains in the United States. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
European and American health officials have identified several cases of monkeypox recently, mostly in young men. The cases reported in Europe and the United States are raising concern because the disease has rarely appeared outside of Africa. International health officials say the risk to the general population is low. They are keeping watch for cases because, for the first time, the disease appears to be spreading among people who did not travel to Africa. Monkeypox is a virus from monkeys that was first identified in 1958. It spreads among wild animals and sometimes jumps to people. Most human cases have been in Central and West Africa, where the disease is endemic. Monkeypox belongs to the same virus family as smallpox, but causes milder symptoms. Most patients only experience fever, body aches, chills, and tiredness. People more seriously sick may develop a rash and cuts on their face and hands that can spread to other parts of the body. The virus develops in the human body from about 5 days to 3 weeks after infection. Most people recover within about 2 to 4 weeks without needing to be hospitalized. Monkeypox can result in death for up to 1 in 10 people and is thought to be more severe in children. People exposed to the virus are often given one of several smallpox vaccines, which have been shown to be effective against monkeypox. Antiviral drugs are also being developed. The World Health Organization estimates there are thousands of monkeypox infections in several African countries every year. Most are in Congo, which reports about 6,000 cases yearly, and Nigeria, with about 3,000 cases a year. Experts say that many infected people are likely never identified as having the disease because of uneven reporting in the countries. Isolated cases of monkeypox are sometimes reported outside of Africa, including in the U.S. and Britain. The cases are normally linked to travel to Africa or contact with animals from areas where the disease is more common. This is the first time monkeypox appears to be spreading among people who did not travel to Africa. Most of the cases involve men who have had sex with other men. In Europe, infections have been reported in Britain, Italy, Portugal, Spain, and Sweden. Britain's Health Security Agency said its cases are not all connected, suggesting that there are several paths of transmission happening. The infections in Portugal were picked up at a men's sexual health center. On Wednesday, U.S. officials reported a case of monkeypox in a man who had recently traveled to Canada, where officials are investigating suspected infections in the Montreal area. Monkeypox has not been documented to spread through sex, but it can be transmitted through close contact with infected people, their body fluids, and their clothing or bedsheets. Jimmy Whitworth is a professor of international public health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He told Reuters that the new cases of monkeypox were highly unusual, but urged people not to worry. This isn't going to cause a nationwide epidemic like COVID did, but it's a serious outbreak of a serious disease, and we should take it seriously, Whitworth said. I'm Katie Weaver.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. Today, we talk about the pursuit of perfection, or at least the things we do to try and make things seem perfect. If you paint something with a brush, it often leaves brush marks. When you paint with a roller, you might still have lines left behind by the roller. Some consider this a flaw, something bad that you don't want, in the paint job. So people came up with a process to cover things up with a perfect layer of paint, called airbrush. The Airbrush Museum says, in 1876, F.E. Stanley created a device that could spray watercolor and ink. 3 years later, Abner Peeler came up with a paint distributor that was later sold as an airbrush. However, this may have not been the first attempt at airbrushing. Some archaeologists claim that early cave people, Neanderthals, used the process to airbrush some of their paintings by blowing paints through hollow bones. Back in the modern day, we also use airbrush as a verb to describe painting or changing something to cover imperfections with or as if with an airbrush. For example, let's say some vandals painted offensive words on the side of your house. If you do not want to see the words ever again, you airbrush over the words to cover them completely. Here is another example. If you apply beauty products or makeup on your face, you can airbrush just about any mark on your skin. In some publications, workers often use software called Photoshop to change an image. They could use it to airbrush all the flaws in an image, or even remove pieces of the image completely. The term Photoshop has since taken on the same meaning as airbrush. There is another way we use the term airbrush. If someone is accused of airbrushing history, They are being accused of changing something bad in the past, as if it did not happen. Now let's hear these two friends use the term airbrush.
Hey, let's meet for coffee tomorrow.
Sure. How about Hal's? That new coffee shop down the street. I hear the coffee is really good.
Let's go somewhere else. I don't like the owner.
Why? What's wrong with Hal?
Don't you remember? He ran for office 2 years ago, and during the campaign, some really bad stuff came out about him.
Really? I don't remember that.
That's because he airbrushed it all from history. Removed. Gone. It's like it all never happened.
Well, people cover up bad things from their past all the time. Besides, he makes really good coffee.
I will find another coffee shop.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Christina Howard, Alex Maieri, and Griffin Corniker are members of the college class of 2022 who mainly feel good about their college experience. Their time in college was affected by the COVID-19 pandemic when education officials shut down most college campuses in March 2020. For over 2 years, they attended school in a different way than they expected when they finished high school. Maieri and Howard spent the last 4 years in college. Corniker finished in 2021, but completed an additional degree this year. VOA spoke to all three to find out how the COVID-19 health crisis affected their college education and their lives. Christina Howard will graduate in June from the University of Chicago. She plans to move to Philadelphia and work with an organization called Partners for Justice. The group helps poor people who are accused of breaking the law and need help understanding the legal system. Howard said she did feel some frustration about the limits on her college time.
I didn't, you know, ever imagine that it would be this much of my college experience would be kind of this weird, disjointed thing.
Howard said she probably would have started her work life doing a job like the one in Philadelphia, even if the pandemic had not happened. But she did say she thought there were more possibilities before the pandemic. She thinks people who lead universities may be glossing over the feeling of lost opportunities that current students have. Alex Maieri studied advertising and design at Syracuse University in New York State. He graduated in the middle of May. He is still looking for a job. While he received some work experience at school, he did not have the chance to work in an advertising or design office during summers, as he had hoped. When pandemic restrictions closed businesses in March 2020, Maieri was looking for a summer job at an advertising company in New York City. He did not get that chance. Instead, he got work experience with the sports communications office at his university. The next summer, in 2021, he did have a chance to work for an advertising company, but he did not go into an office. Instead of feeling disappointed, Maieri said he thought about one good result. He worked for an advertising company called Motive, based in Denver, Colorado. In normal times, he might not have been able to work there because it would have been too costly to spend 4 months living away from home. Maieri, however, did have some things he was unhappy about. For example, he noted that he would have liked to go to class in person during his third year. Most of that time was spent taking classes by video link. He also missed out on one important experience.
The biggest thing that I always say about COVID to anybody was not being able to go abroad, travel for a study abroad program. That's the one thing going into college that I was probably looking forward to the most.
Griffin Corniker was a star basketball player growing up near Rochester, New York. However, he did not think he was good enough to play at a college with a famous basketball team. So he decided to attend Middlebury College in Vermont. Middlebury is a small college with a liberal arts study program. During his third year at Middlebury, Corniker was one of the team's main players. The team was good, winning 21 of 27 games. One win came in the 2020 National Tournament for small colleges. About 2 weeks later, his college experience changed. Middlebury started teaching classes by video link. The next school year, 2020-2021, there was no basketball. Corniker finished college with an economics degree, but he did not have a chance to play one more season with his basketball teammates. "We would have been the best we'd ever been," he said. Corniker even had a job offer, but he turned it down to play basketball for one more season. He decided to change schools and study for another degree in finance at Case Western Reserve University, CWRU, in Cleveland, Ohio. Since he did not play during his fourth year at Middlebury, he was permitted to play one more basketball season. "It really was an academic decision," he said, noting that he did not want to go to just any school. He wanted to go to a school that would prepare him for his future job. Corniker was not the only new player at CWRU. There were two other college graduates who wanted one more chance to play. They came to Cleveland and joined some good players. By March 2022, CWRU finished its best season ever. The team won games against top academic schools like the University of Chicago and Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And it won two games in the 2022 NCAA tournament. During the season, the team won 20 of 27 games. Corniker said he always knew basketball was going to be a tool he could use to get a good education. Now, he has degrees from two of the top schools in the U.S. In the end, all three students said they thought they would go on to have good lives. They were disappointed with some parts of their time in college during the pandemic, but they do not believe the last 2 years will be a long-term setback. "I really do think it's been a good experience," Corniker said. "Hopefully, it's something we complain about when we're old and grumpy, and the pandemic is wrapped up by then." I'm Dan Friedel.
A new study suggests that pollution of all kinds kills about 9 million people worldwide each year. Air pollution from industrial processes and the expansion of cities accounted for about 75% of the deaths, researchers found. Air pollution also drove a 7% increase in all pollution-related deaths from 2015 to 2019. The study was a cooperative effort between environmental interest groups and scientists. It was based on examinations of worldwide death rates and pollution levels. The findings recently appeared in the publication Lancet Planetary Health. The study separated traditional contaminants from more modern pollutants. Examples of traditional contaminants are indoor smoke or wastewater. Modern pollutants include air pollution from vehicles or industrial activities and poisonous chemicals. The researchers found that deaths from traditional pollutants are dropping worldwide, but they still remain a major problem in Africa and some other developing countries. Contaminated water, soil, and dirty indoor air made Chad, the Central African Republic, and Niger the top three nations with the most pollution-related deaths. In some countries, state programs to cut indoor air pollution and improvements in sanitation have helped reduce death rates. In Ethiopia and Nigeria, for example, such efforts cut deaths by two-thirds between 2000 and 2019, the study found. Modern kinds of pollution are rising in most countries, especially developing ones, the researchers said. Deaths caused by modern pollutants, such as heavy metals, agricultural chemicals, and carbon emissions, are skyrocketing, said study co-writer Rachel Kupka. She heads the New York-based Global Alliance on Health and Pollution. Kupka said deaths linked to modern pollutants had risen 66% since 2000. The study found that several major cities, including Bangkok, Beijing, and Mexico City, had seen success in reducing outdoor air pollution. But in many smaller cities, pollution levels continued to climb. The researchers noted that pollution now kills about the same number of people a year around the world as cigarette smoking and secondhand smoke combined. 9 million deaths is a lot of deaths, Philip Landrigan told the Associated Press about the study results. He is director of the Global Public Health Program and Global Pollution Observatory at Boston College in Massachusetts. The bad news is that it's not decreasing, Landrigan added. We're making gains in the easy stuff, and we're seeing the more difficult stuff, which is the outdoor industrial air pollution and chemical pollution, still going up. The study makes several suggestions for ways to cut the number of deaths. These include creating better recording and reporting methods and stronger government policies to reduce pollution linked to industrial activities and vehicle emissions. I'm Brian Lynn.
Christian clergy have long provided counseling or religious services in hospitals, prisons, and homes for the sick and ill in the United States. They are often called chaplains. Now, Buddhist chaplains are leading an ever more diverse number of religious counselors that includes Muslims, Hindus, and others. In Portland, Oregon, Skylar Freeman has a terminal heart condition and other illnesses. There to guide her along was Reverend Joe Lawrence, a Zen Buddhist who has years of practice and training to support end-of-life patients. Rather than appealing to God or a Christian prayer, Lawrence talked of Eastern spiritual traditions. "The body can weigh us down sometimes," she counseled. "Where is the divine or the sacred in your decline?"
Buddhists say they are well positioned for the times. They appeal to people from different cultural and religious backgrounds, including people who identify as non-religious. A growing number of Americans, roughly one-third, are non-religious. Buddhist study and training programs have been established or have grown in recent years. They include the Buddhist Ministry Initiative at Harvard Divinity School and the Buddhism Track at Union Theological Seminary, among others. In the past, Buddhist chaplains were often hired by hospitals and police departments to work with Asian immigrant communities. During World War II, they served Japanese American soldiers in the military. Today, however, they work with many different Americans. In a first-of-its-kind report published this month, Sanford and another researcher identified 425 Buddhist chaplains in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. The chaplains represented all major branches of Buddhism. However, the researchers say there are likely many more. More than 40% work in healthcare. Others serve in schools, prisons, or as self-employed counselors, the researchers found. Lee Miller is the director of academic and public programs at Maitripa College, a Tibetan Buddhist college in Portland. She has seen increased interest in its Master of Divinity program since its launch 10 years ago. Hospitals and other institutions are interested in hiring Buddhist chaplains, Miller said, to increase staff diversity. Buddhist chaplains, she added, are also good at relating to others using inclusive, neutral language, while Christians fall back on God language, leading prayers or reading Bible scriptures.
Meanwhile, training in mindfulness and meditation, as well as beliefs regarding the nature of self, reality, and the impermanence of suffering, give Buddhists special tools to deal with pain and death. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.